Morning. The E12 Finance Division will come to order. It's Monday, May 6, 2013. Today, we're going to get an overview from groups receiving legacy money in the E12 Division. We have three presentations on the agenda. First, for libraries, we're going to hear from Margaret Ranum, the director of the Plum Creek and Pioneerland Regional Library Systems. Welcome, and for each of the testifiers for the tape, please state your name and your organization.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Ranum. I'm the director of the Plum Creek and Pioneerland Regional Library Systems. I am also here on behalf of Minnesota Library Association and the other 10 regional public library systems in the state. Just as a brief bit of background, regional libraries have received legacy funding for the past two biennium, and we're here again requesting additional funding for the next biennium of $4.25 million each year of the biennium. Regional libraries are how the state funds statewide initiatives. Regional libraries are the conduit through which you provide infrastructure dollars for everything from delivery services around the regions, as well as statewide delivery, and telecommunications aid that provides broadband, free wireless, and broadband access in every library. We also do all of the resource sharing and reciprocal borrowing. So when you're on the road from your district, you can borrow an item and at St. Paul, return it to your local library, and it comes back through the regular delivery system. Regional libraries are a very efficient way of distributing legacy dollars and legacy programs. As you can see from the brief handout that you have in front of you, there are 360 public libraries that cover the entire state in all 87 counties. We, in fiscal year 2012, did 2,106 legacy programs, touched over 160,000 Minnesotans, and we actually did programs in more than just the library locations. We were doing programs in outreach locations, in deposit collection locations. Some of the locations in rural Minnesota that would never receive a legacy program got them through their public library system as a location where we knew we wanted to make sure we were touching people with these dollars. The other major aspect about regional public libraries is that we are partners in the communities. We have partnerships with every local organization in education, history, and arts. In many cases, as you know, in a lot of small towns, the public library is the arts, cultural, and historical organization in town. From a microfilm reader or a obituary index in the basement, all the way up through the children's and adult art programs where they're displayed on the library walls. You see a whole wealth of this kind of activity in libraries. Legacy dollars have really enhanced our ability, though, to touch people in the rural areas. And from our point of view, that allows us to partner really effectively with the other statewide partners, particularly the Minnesota Historical Society. We've done several significant partnerships with them, running out what you see across the street as a statewide program in a large location, running it into smaller locations, and giving everybody in the state the opportunity to benefit from those dollars. I think I'll stop there and ask if there are questions or any other information I can provide.
Thank you, Mr. Ranum. Questions from the division? Okay. Right. Thank you very much
Thank
for the overview.
Much.
Our next testifier from the Children's Museum, Minnesota Children's Museum, Diane Crizon, president. Welcome back to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to share what we've been doing. My name is Diane Crizon. I am the president of Minnesota Children's Museum. In your materials, you should have a one-pager that I'm just going to speak through this morning. I'm actually going to start on the back of it where the maps are, because I think that's the best way to illustrate how we have been using legacy funding to date. Minnesota Children's Museum has visitors that come from all over the state, and you have pictures there showing visitors, members, and school groups. But I'm going to focus on the polka dot chart there, which highlights, frankly, thanks to legacy funding, we've been able to go beyond our walls of our Children's Museum in St. Paul and bring cultural experiences to communities and embed them in communities all around the state. This would not have been possible without legacy funding. In the prior two appropriations that we received, we have done three projects across those 4 years. One of the projects is we have started up a second children's museum in Rochester, Minnesota. So our request to you today really comes from two museums at the same time consolidating to one. We operate as one nonprofit, but operate in two locations now. So since opening our doors in Rochester, Minnesota, a little bit over a year ago, we have welcomed more than 35,000 visitors from southeastern Minnesota that have had an opportunity for a children's museum experience. And while they came to visit Minnesota Children's Museum in St. Paul, obviously the frequency of a visit is impacted by the distance that you have to drive. A second project that we've been doing is we developed an exhibit called Storyland that has been touring around the state. And it is literally an exhibit where children step into three beloved books, immerse themselves in those books, Tale of Peter Rabbit, Snowy Day, and Where's Spots, and develop pre-literacy skills while they play in that experience. And this is something that stays in a community for 3.5 months, and then it moves on to another community and is free access to that community. When it was in Redwood Falls, one of the stops on its tour, I heard from local officials how excited they were because there were plans for groups to bus in from a 60-mile radius over the course of those 3 months. So it was really an opportunity for Redwood Falls to be a destination during that tour stay. So I think that's a great example of what that exhibit is doing for communities. And then the third project that we've done is what we call Smart Play Spots. Those are a small-scale exhibit, about the size of the Storyland exhibit, about 500 square feet. But these are permanent installations, predominantly in libraries around the state. There are some in community centers, but libraries are just a wonderful hand-in-glove fit because these are, again, designed to develop the pre-emergent literacy skills that children need in order to become strong readers. We have a spot. I mean, Senator Wieger joined me for a grand opening in Maplewood for a spot that's there. And I know Senator Jensen, I'm excited to go to your community this Saturday as we open one in the Owatonna Library as well. So all over the state, and those are the green dots. These are permanent installations in children's book areas. So those are the three projects that we have done with the prior appropriation. And then just on the front page, I'll talk a little bit about our request for this next biennial session. We are requesting $1 million from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. That is equal to the amount that the Children's Museum received in the last biennium. And we want to do three projects with this funding. One is to launch a new exhibition called Creativity Jam. This is really an opportunity to provide creative expression and really collaborative innovation for children and families to come together with both visual arts, with kind of do-it-yourself spaces, which provide unique materials and authentic tools for families to create things together, for children to co-create with children they don't know and engage in that in the experience. And we also want to leverage social media to extend the experience and to get input from people about what types of experiences we should put into this exhibition. A second project that we want to do is to continue that Storyland tour. We would like to continue that for another 2 years as it tours around the state. As I gave the example of Redwood Falls, we just get a lot of excitement as this goes into a community. So extended funding over 2 years would allow this tour to continue to 6 more sites. And then thirdly, as I mentioned, this is a request that's really for 2 children's museums. So the request that would support a Minnesota Children's Museum of Rochester would be really focused on the access portion of the legacy funding statutory purpose for it to exist. And we would like to really be able to open those doors more widely to all children and families in the community, regardless of their ability to pay. So the opportunity to provide free admission to families that are of lower income, to provide financial aid to schools and groups, and to have that on a sliding fee based on the free and reduced lunch, and then also to provide other events to support community groups serving families in need. And then with all that, as those groups come in, to really enrich the programming to enhance it. So I guess I'd last like to end, since this is the Education Committee, to just say the great thing about children's museums is not only is it a cultural attraction, but it is an educational experience as well, too. There is a whole body of research that talks about how play is the age-appropriate way for children to develop a lot of skills to get them ready for school. And so whether that's literacy-based skills through learning experience or numeracy skills, but as well as something that I think you might have had testimony earlier in this year when Dr. Megan Gunner from the University of Minnesota presented on the benefits of what researchers are calling executive function, which is really the development of children, their prefrontal cortex brain development that helps them be ready for formal education, to be able to sit still, pay attention, follow directions, and research says that in pretend play, as children engage in that with other children, that is really a very rich way that they wire their brains for executive function and help them get ready for school. So with that, I will wrap up, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee would have.
Thank you, Ms. Kreizon. Senator Johnson.
I have a question. What is your program for helping low-income families in the St. Paul Museum?
Yeah, thank you. Well, thanks to a long-term appropriation that Minnesota Children's Museum has received through the Department of Education since 1997, we are able to provide this very exact program to families in St. Paul. So 25% of our attendance comes through this free and reduced program, which is highly subsidized through the funding from the Department of Education, as well as a lot of our private fundraising does that. And so if families have are at an income level of 130% of the poverty level or below, they get a free membership with the same unlimited access of a paid membership. We also partner with Head Start programs in order to bring those families in for events. So that would be an example of the events for community and groups, where you create an experience for a group to come into the museum. And often for parents who would come with their child, it's their first exposure to a museum experience. And so they understand what it's all about. And with Head Start families, since we know that they meet the income qualifications for that free membership, once they've seen what the experience is, then we offer that free membership for them to return on their own. And then as well as we provide the sliding fee for financial aid to school groups based on the free and reduced lunch population. So all of those elements exist, and we are hopeful and excited to bring that to southeastern Minnesota.
Further questions? Chair Sandra Jensen looks forward to the Owatonna opening. Hopefully we won't be in session that day.
Yes, and I get to read during the
Absolutely.
Event, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, Ms. Kreizon, thank you, particularly the emphasis reaching so many different audiences, but as we try to have all students ready for K, with only 50% ready now, your outreach, particularly to those students at risk, is very much needed. It's a key part of our strategy. Your partnerships with the libraries and other groups, foundations, et cetera, is right on mark. So thank you. Our next testimony is from the Purpich Center for the Arts, Pam Paulson. And welcome back to the committee, Ms. Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. We have a video we're going to show you. I might have to scoot. Pam Paulson, and I serve as the Senior Director of Policy at the Purpich Center for Arts Education, and we are the Minnesota State Agency for Arts Education. I've been leading the projects that have been funded by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund over these last couple of years. Thank you for this opportunity to meet with you today and tell you a little bit about the projects that we've been working on. We feel we've had a privilege to be working with an additional group of students and teachers across our state. And I'm just wondering, if you think back to what was your experience in school, what might have been your very favorite class or the most memorable project that you worked on?
Ms. Paulson, I'll ask members, too, if they want to reflect on that later. But okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I assume it probably was similar to my own, which was a class that allowed me to make connections that I had not thought of before and were very meaningful to me. So in the spirit of that idea of connecting learning for students, making it memorable and engaging, we have a goal of this project to use arts integration to engage students and teachers in relevant learning across the curriculum that combines subject areas to increase the learning of both the teachers and the students. And to give you just a little bit of a flavor of that kind of thinking, we have a teacher who said, "Creating an artistic expression requires a high level of academic, intellectual, and emotional rigor, and our students reached much higher levels of learning through this project." Currently, we are running two networks for this project, networks of teachers in the Lakes Country region, which is the west central part. And just to give you a few names of school districts that we're working with, Osakis, Purim, Rossay, Breckenridge, Morris, Hawley. And the second region is the southeast region, where some of the school districts that we're working with include Rochester, Austin, La Crescent, Mabel Canton, Kenyon Wanamingo, Owatonna, Leroy Ostrander, and Albert Lee. We'd like to start a third region. So far, we have worked with more than 4,000 students. We've had an impact on more than 4,000 students, more than 200 teachers, and we've been working in about 20 school districts. So in order for you to have a better sense of what this project actually looks like, we thought you might like to see the teachers and the students in action. So we have a 3-minute videotape of one of their projects called Getting the Picture. And it involves students at New York Mills High School, which was one of the schools involved in the Lakes Country region. The students are doing an integrated assignment called Stories About the Ecosystem. And this combines science and visual arts photography so that each of those subject areas' standards are addressed and met by these students. You'll also see that the kids are outside and they're seeing something about parks and trails and water and the environment, values that we know are supported by the legacy funds. And you may even hear a few Minnesota accents as you watch this videotape. So let's watch this short video called Getting the Picture.
A lot of students that don't ever go outside, and they are missing lots of really cool things. I felt like if we could get them out in nature, not just, you know, outside my classroom, not, you know, around the school building, but really be in it, they would understand ecosystems. They would understand how nature has to work together.
Tammy and Shauna are both teachers at New York Mills School. Tammy is a visual arts teacher. Shauna is a science teacher, and I have been working with Shauna and Tammy to support them as they develop their unit, combining science and the visual arts.
Our big plan is to have them take a picture of an ecosystem, and then they have to actually zoom in and take a picture of something that would be one part of that ecosystem. And then they'll do another part of it, and then they have to explain how it interacts. Kids can describe things, but do they understand it, and can they put it together?
Right.
Manipulate it, you know? Do they really get it? Can they apply it?
Deb Knutson came as a
visiting artist, and Deb talked about all the different kinds of photography that was out there and all the different things that we talked about in our standards.
This has probably been the best science class I've ever taken because of this project. Doing these projects is really fun because you just gain so much knowledge because you're actually doing it.
I think the students took the ecosystems and the science standards and then tied the art in right with it, so they were a very equal part. They had started to look at things in nature more as artists also, besides what were requirements of our project.
I'm kind of excited. I have quite a few more actually exceeding than I thought. To me, it's important because it means that they understand the standards that we're trying to implement.
This picture is a landscape photograph taken at Maplewood State Park. The focus of this picture is a deciduous forest in the background. This picture has a unique angle of perspective as it was taken from the base of a widowmaker looking up along the trunk. This fallen tree is not only a source of food for decomposers such as insects and fungi, but it will add new nutrients to the soil, promoting new growth.
Including the art with it, I think it helped them get the picture, I guess. I don't know if you want to say that. I think they understood it more. Art and science really go good together.
So you can see the students are enthused and the teachers are enthused, which is wonderful. So we're so thankful that the legislators had the foresight to include arts education as a specific category for funding through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And as a state agency, we were actually asked by a subcommittee of legislators in the Senate Education Committee, chaired by Senator Stumpf in 2009, called us in to ask if we could do an arts integration project as part of the legacy funding. And Senator Saxhog served on that subcommittee. So in addition to these regional networks where we're working with teachers in these school districts and both regions, we are just about to complete a website so that these materials can be made available more widely to teachers across the state. We were very lucky to have an outside evaluator work with us, and she was looking at both student engagement and student achievement. So the students were given a survey and asked to be candid. They said that 94% of them put effort into this integrated class, which is a striking statistic when you know how hard it can be in classrooms to get students engaged. And when they're engaged and they're working, they are not bullying and they're not misbehaving. 86% of them kept working when they were stuck, which leads us to believe that they are showing the ability of persistence, which we know employers care a lot about. And 80% were willing to try new things, because some of this was quite new. If you're in a science class, you weren't expecting to learn how to do photography. And so we know that employers are also telling us that that creativity and innovation piece is very important to them. The teacher results were also very striking. 96% of the teachers who were involved in this project improved their ability to design curriculum that relates to several subject areas. And maybe one that you might be even more interested in is that 83% said that they increased their ability to understand how to design carefully aligned assessments. And the reason I say you might be interested in that is that as we begin a new system of teacher evaluation, we are going to have to know how to create assessments that are reliable. And it's very difficult to do that. So these teachers have a huge leg up. They know exactly what they're addressing and which part of the standards and what kind of assessment aligns with that. So to switch gears for just one second, the other part of the legacy funding we used to create a statewide study on the status of arts education, never having been done before. And we called it Building a Legacy, Arts Education for All Minnesota Students. Most of you probably got a copy of that, and if you didn't, we're very happy to make one available to you if you just let us know you'd like one. From that study, we learned that 2/3 of Minnesota schools would like help with arts integration. They either want to start a program or increase the work of something they're already doing, and we know that we have a big job ahead of us to meet that demand. So our request for you is $2.3 million. You can see it in your packet. This packet contains a sheet that lists our goals. It's called the Purpich 2014-15 Plan for Arts and Cultural Heritage Funds. It lists our goals in one of the boxes of increasing student and teacher learning. It shows the measures that we plan to use to hold ourselves accountable. And it indicates some strategies that we'd like to be using to accomplish this work. And you will see that one of those strategies is technology. because at this point in time, all of the school sites that we're working with are in rural Minnesota. So the funds would be used to continue the two current networks, add a third network, and this is something that I'm very interested in, developing new high school arts integrated courses. It's harder to do it at the high school level. The courses are all independent, the teachers are all in silos, and it's very hard to do this. But we have a number of high schools in our project, and we'd like to welcome 10 more into this project so that they could create courses that would go in the course catalog. This would be one way of sustaining this work over time. We'd like to replicate that statewide study that we did in 2010 and do that in 2014-15. So the total is $2.3 million. Even in this very brief time, I wanted to give you some data, some numbers, and information because I know that this is important to you as you determine which programs are effective and in which programs you'd like to invest. But the bottom line, and I know you're the Education Committee and you understand this better than anyone else, is that a great education is priceless. The Arts Integration Program is engaging students and teachers in meaningful work worth doing. And they are achieving the Minnesota academic standards in a time when many students are falling behind. Our state can't afford to waste any student or teacher talent, so thank you for investing in these programs, which have proved to be highly effective for our students who need a top-notch education to become our future citizens, employees, and leaders. And I'm happy to try to answer some questions if there are any.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson. Questions? From the committee. Yes, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Paulson. I see that you've, in your request of $2.3 million, you have $56,000 for administrative cost, or about 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
In the previous funding that you've received, can you tell me what your actual administrative cost was? Was it higher than that, or
it was not.
Lower than that? Or
no, we said we would stick in that 2.5.
So do you just use the 2.5 as a median then, or do you actually keep track? And can you actually tell me what the administrative cost was?
Yes. Senator, thank you. Sorry. Yes, we do keep track, and it is in our budget, and we can tell you what it's spent for. Mm-hmm. It is spent internally for the most part, but we did also have a relationship with one of the EXUs where the part of those funds were used. They processed all of our payments in the Lakes Country region.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir, Dave.
And I appreciate that information, ma'am, but I'm still not getting my question answered. Can you tell me, do you just use the 2.5% and assign that? You're saying you actually keep track. What percentage is it actually when you keep track? What is that actual percent? Is it coming out right at 2.5?
Ms. Paulson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dimes, we set it aside because we determined about what it was going to cost to run this program internally. And we made an agreement we would not exceed 2.5%. So we set that aside, and that's what we use, and we do keep track of it.
Further questions of the committee? Well, Ms. Paulson, thank you for your excellent work and laying out that vision for the next 5 years. And for members, this is just for information at this point, but the legacy, all of the arts, the legacy money, they carefully look at how we're hopefully coordinating efforts, and each of the testifiers has shown the linkage between our objectives, and at this point, we just wanted to get that overview, and if there's a need for follow-up, we'll be in touch.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Good. And members, we're meeting tomorrow at 8:30. We're going to take the Safe Support of Schools Act, sponsored by Senator Dibble. Senator Nienau distributed a recent fiscal note on the floor. But I believe there's a packet of information that'll be made available before the hearing if anyone needs anything further on the issue. And if you I think we have about 10 or so people have expressed interest for testifying. It's the intent that we'll have 30 minutes for each side, proponents or opponents, and then and then, you know, obviously there'll be discussion time as well. So any questions regarding tomorrow's hearing? Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like a list of who the testifiers are. Is that either emailed to me? Would that be? Thank you.
Yes. Despite any other questions at this point? And you're all probably wondering, what about the conference committee? I'm wondering, too. The House has the gavel, as you know, and they have not called the first meeting yet. I know, just as we're very interested in finding out what our targets are going to be, I know that Chair Markart, he was on the radio this morning expressing that concern to get the target information as we close in on the final couple of weeks. It was to have been Tuesday. That's not going to happen. So we are patiently waiting for when that first meeting will be called. And it'll be soon. So any questions on where we're at on that? There are some provisions, obviously, that are different between the bodies, but if you have particular provisions that you want to ask me about as we start getting into the negotiations, please let me know. Either in our bill or in their bill, of course, everything's on the table when we discuss these items. There being no further business, we're adjourned. We'll see you tomorrow.